Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 167 for October 5th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
People are finding out it's not only the United States but around the world. Hey, there's another whiskey other than scotch. Yeah, it's bourbon whiskey.
That's Jim Rutledge, the master distiller at Four Roses. And there's a lot to talk about in bourbon country these days. I spent several days visiting some of Kentucky's distilleries last week following the Kentucky Bourbon Festival, and you'll hear more from Jim later, along with Truman Cox of Buffalo Trace, Larry Cass of Heaven Hill, and Kevin Smith of Maker's Mark. First, though, let's catch up on the news. The war of words between India and the Scotch whiskey industry took another turn this past week. India's Supreme Court threw out a lawsuit demanding that India's Peter Scott whiskey brand change its name. Scott is one of the terms the Scotch Whiskey Association has tried to protect under the geographical protection standards that the European Union and the World Trade Organization have put in place to protect regional designations like Champagne in France. On the Irish whiskey front, a couple of new releases to talk about. First, Nepaugh Castle will be releasing a 15-year-old Irish whiskey in the next few weeks. It's the first time Castle Brands has released a Nepaugh Castle bottling with an age statement instead of the distilling vintage. The Wild Geese Irish whiskey is named after the Irish soldiers of the late 1600s and 1700s who fought in wars all over the world, including the Revolutionary War in the States. It's being sold in both blended and single malt versions and is distilled at Cooley Distillery for Protégé International. It's primarily available in duty-free stores. And then there's the Irishman, a line of Irish whiskies produced by Bernard Walsh.
We've got a pot still Irish-style whiskey. It's a throwback to maybe 100 or 150 years ago when pot still whiskey was the champagne of whiskies. And also a single malt, an aged single malt. On the pot still side, it's I don't know if I should mention a little bit of history around pot still. If you like, in Scotland we have malt and grain whiskey. In Ireland you have malt, grain and pot still. The pot still was, I suppose, happened out of necessity 200 years ago when the English put excess taxes on malt barley. So the Irish decided to put some unmalted barley into the pot and created this new style of whiskey. Quite a peppery, almost grassy style whiskey. And in recent years there's been a revival on that, and that's a whiskey style that I love, and we've decided to recreate that. But to make it even more different, we've added a high percentage of malt barley in there. So we've 70% malt. It's called the Irishman 70% malt, which, so first of all, when you're drinking our whiskey, you get this lovely pepper spice up front, and then whoosh, an explosion of fruits and a beautiful, beautiful finish. Yeah.
Where's it produced?
We're in contract with Middleton Distillery, so all our whiskey is out of Middleton.
And where's it sold?
We are selling throughout Europe, the USA, of course, and Russia. Huge demand for Irish whiskey in Russia, South Africa, right into Asia, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, and just started in Australia.
Market for Irish whiskey is really booming, isn't it?
Absolutely. For the last 8 years, it's been double-digit growth, but even more so, I would say this year you're going to see the biggest growth. Even though the world is falling down around us this year, in Irish whiskies, it's going to be our biggest year, I'd say, yet.
You'll find links for The Irishman, Nepaugh Castle, and The Wild Geese at the WhiskeyCast website. I don't mention blended scotches on WhiskeyCast very often, but one that's well worth mentioning is just being released. Barry Brothers and Rudd in London has just released the fourth edition of its Blue Hanger blend. I had the chance to taste this one with Doug McVicker of Barry Brothers and Rudd at Whiskey Live Paris. He picked whiskies from 16 to 34 years old for the blend, and the sherry cask influence is well balanced with some very nice floral notes. It's available in Europe and the Far East. Douglas Lang is out with its list of new independent bottlings for October. The list of old malt cask releases includes 12-year-olds from Ardmore, Braval, and Milton Duff, an 18-year-old Rosebank, and 19-year-olds from Longmorn and Mortlock. The Old and Rare series has two new releases, a 25-year-old Beaumont and a 30-year-old Highland Park, and the highlight of the Provenance series is an 11-year-old bourbon-matured Linkwood. Back in episode 156 last August, I mentioned the Brave Spirits line of military-themed spirits. It includes whiskey along with gin, vodka, and rum, and the company donates $2 from the sale of every bottle to charities that support military members and emergency services personnel. The Brave Spirits Foundation just made its latest donation, $2,500 to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and has donated more than $17,000 so far this year. The line is available in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and other states, along with exchange stores at some U.S. military bases. Now, we all know what the Angels' share is, the amount of whiskey that's lost every year during the maturation process because of evaporation. Given enough time, the Angels can pretty much wipe out an entire barrel. But is there a way to cheat the Angels? Glenfiddich artist-in-residence Dave Diamond has been working with the experts at the distillery to find out. They've decided to bury a 500-liter cask of new-make spirit under the floor of one of the Glenfiddich warehouses. It'll stay there until the year 2108, when it will be uncovered and bottled. And that's where the art comes in. Diamond has created 25 special presentation boxes that will be sold at the distillery and the Toronto International Art Fair for $2,000 each. The idea, since the buyers won't live long enough to collect the whiskey, they'll have to pass the boxes along as a gift to their friends or heirs, and in 2108, the survivors will be able to take the boxes to Glenfiddich when the cask is unearthed to have them filled with 100-year-old single malt scotch. He's calling the project A Drink to Us When We're Both Dead. Time now to check the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Nothing on the calendar yet for 2108, but October of 2008 is a busy month. Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest San Francisco is this coming Friday night, and there are special tastings going on all this week leading up to Whiskey Fest. If you're in the San Francisco area, check the WhiskeyCast website for a link to get the latest updates. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter continues its fall series of single malt dinners October 16th in Boston, the 22nd in Washington, the 24th in Philadelphia, and the 30th in Miami. The Milano Whiskey Festival is the weekend of October 18th and 19th in Milano, Italy. Royal Mile Whiskies in London will hold a tasting of scotches from Silent Distilleries on the 23rd, and Whiskey Live Toronto is the 24th. The Lindoris Whiskey Society's annual Whiskey Fest is October 25th and 26th in Lindoris, Belgium, and Whiskey Live Glasgow is October 31st and November 1st. There's a full schedule of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at Laphroaig.com. If you've been listening to the last several episodes, I hope you've enjoyed the great WhiskeyCast fall road trip for 2008. The morning after I returned home from Whiskey Live Paris, I was on the road to Kentucky. It was the week after the Kentucky Bourbon Festival, and things were just returning to normal at the distilleries. At least, as normal as they can be, after thousands of people hit the area for the Bourbon Festival and the Ryder Cup in Louisville. First stop, Buffalo Trace in Frankfort, where they were bottling this year's George T. Stagg bourbon the morning I was there, and I was lucky enough to become the first outsider to taste this year's antique collection. The Trace's Truman Cox walks us through this year's lineup.
The 2008 series, I think people are going to be very impressed with the George T. Stagg. The William LaRue Weller is, again, in top-notch form. Eagle Rare, 17-year-old, is a very good, excellent whiskey, always a good performer. Again, the rye lovers out there are going to like the Thomas Handy and the big, bold flavors, and the aged Sazerac 18 is good, but I think the standouts this year are going to be in the Stagg and the William LaRue.
Let's go through them one by one. Let's start with the William LaRue Weller. What makes this one unique?
Uncut, unfiltered. We're looking at this year is 125.3 proof. Where we selected in the warehouse has made it a little bigger and bolder flavors than what we had last year. we went a little more delicate last year with the William LaRue Weller, and had some people comment on it that they maybe wasn't as bold as they were looking for in an uncut, unfiltered. So we tried to pick barrels this year that had a little bit fuller flavor, a lot more complexity, and getting back to what people expect of that whiskey.
And the Eagle Rare 17.
It's a 17-year-old whiskey, great bourbon.
It is what it is, basically.
It is what it is. It's just a great, bold, flavored whiskey.
And let's go to the rye for a second before we get to the big one. Let's talk first of all about the Sazerac 18.
The Sazerac 18 is a very stable through the years. There is a bit of a flavor difference between it, but that extra age on that rye kind of mellows it out. I myself have never been a real rye fan, but the Sazerac 18 takes some of the harshness most people usually associate with the rye and kind of mellow it out, but still leave a lot of that good rye flavor.
And the Thomas H. Andy Sazerac, which is a different animal altogether.
A completely different animal. Being the 6 to 7 year old and an uncut, unfiltered, leaves all those really full mouthfeel that people expect from an uncut, unfiltered. A lot of those chemicals and the flavors that are in there add a completely different mouthfeel to a rye than what most people expect.
And finally, the granddaddy of them all. You had a hard act to follow because last year's Stag was regarded as one of the best bourbons ever. I think I scored last year's Stag somewhere well above 90. I think in the 92, 93 range, one of the highest bourbons I've ever rated. You have a hard act to follow this year.
I will completely agree with you. Last year, I think the 2007 Stag, in my personal opinion, is one of the best Stags we've ever put out. And I have all of them here to taste, so I did check them, and I thought 07 was fantastic. This year we tried to maintain that same act. 2008, coming from the same areas of the warehouse, just a few months younger, still wonderful flavors. It's got a little bit different on the complexity, but it has all those same great flavors the 07 did.
And let's go through the numbers on this one.
The numbers... we're looking at 141.8 proof. The 07 was a 15.6. This year's a 15.4, 141.8 proof. So it's had a long time to really concentrate those flavors up.
You think you beat last year's collection?
That's my goal. My goal is to always make a better set this year than we did last year. And I have a whole bunch of barrels to pick from. So that is always the goal, to make it better and find that perfect whiskey.
My favorites of the five were the three barrel-proof whiskeys, the Stag, of course, along with the William LaRue Weller and the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye. All five will be at retailers in very limited supply starting later this month. And by the way, you'll hear more from Truman Cox on an upcoming episode of Whiskey Cast, and you'll meet one of the Trace's secrets, a lab insider who noses dozens of cask samples every day. Next stop, down the road in Lawrenceburg, where Jim Rutledge at Four Roses has just finished bottling his new limited edition bourbon. The Mariage series will become an annual release, and it shows the unique versatility that Four Roses has.
We're the only bourbon distillery that will actually distill and age more than one bourbon recipe, mash bill and combination of the yeast. Put away and age, you can get multiple flavors just starting like that. But we actually use two mash bills, and we use five yeasts with each one of those during the process, five yeasts with each mash bill during fermentation. So we come up with 10 distinctively different, unique flavors of bourbon that we distill. We put in barrels separately, we age, and then at the end of the day, we started that in order to get consistency. The hardest thing in our business is to be consistent from one bottling run to the next because there's no two barrels alike. As hard as we try, there will always be differences. So we had 10 variable flavors. Now, as a result of that, when we started doing our single barrels and small batches, it's always something different. Our standard single barrel, for example, is one, of course, it's just one recipe. It's both of our recipes are very high rye content. 20% rye in one, 35% by far the highest rye of any other bourbon that's distilled. Even the 20% is higher than the other next to highest, which is about 18%, 17 or 18%. And with the five yeasts, we just get so many unique flavors. So our standard single barrel is a highest rye content, 35%. We chose the yeast that generates this light, delicate, fruity flavor, and they complement each other, very smooth and mellow. And then when we came out with our small batch, we chose four recipes. The recipe we used for single barrel was not part of that. And so you'd think they're coming from two different distilleries. They're so different. So as we do our special limited edition single barrels, it's always something. It's not the same recipe as our standard. Then we thought, you know, we really can do so much. We can, if you take 10 recipes and you look at the combinations you can make, it's infinite number because you can make... once you factor in ages, it'd be a 6-year-old or 8-year-old or 12-year-old, whatever. And then you can factor in different percentages. If you just use two of them, you could have 50-50. You could have 70% of one, 30% of another, 80-20. Once you factor that on, it's an infinite number of flavors. So we decided to come out with this just to showcase the variability of what we can do and what we can put on the market. I started a mariage collection. A mariage is the French spelling of marriage. It's one less R. And it's often used for years in wine when you marry two wines together. You take one wine or one vintage, marry it with another, and you come up with something totally different. And the idea is you take one plus one doesn't equal two. One plus one may be four or five. You get something better. And so we worked for about a year on this, and the first year, which we just introduced, we just bottled beginning of last week, our mariage, we took one of the recipes is what we use for our standard single barrel. And the other, the high rye content, the light, delicate fruitiness. Then the other is the lower rye content, 20%, but with the yeast, it generates a bit of a spicy character, nutmeg or cinnamon, cloves. You see from that. So we marry these two together, mariage, and you get something that is absolutely unbelievable. And the amazing part about it is when we found these two and we looked at different ages, and the one mash bill with the highest rise, over 13 years old, I think might have been 13 years, 10 months, or something like that. The other's over 10 years old. And when we put those together and we bottled the mariage, it's at barrel strength. It's not chill filtered. And when you sample it, and we'll go up and sample some in a minute, you'll see what I'm talking about, I think. You would think you're tasting a very smooth metal 80 proof where it's at barrel strength. And that's, you have to see it and taste it to believe it. So don't take my word for it. I want you to try it and see.
Now, this really dates back to sort of the heritage of Four Roses and some of the history that came about from distilling so many different whiskeys here, right?
It does. And even when you go back to the 30s and 40s, we had a straight bourbon, which was the top-selling bourbon in the market, but we also had a blend of 100% whiskeys, 100% straight whiskeys. And... So it's something that goes back in time and history, and something we've always been able to do. And I look forward to the years. I wish I had more years left just to see what we will come up with. Every year we will come out with something different. It's really, really exciting. And it's something, what I like about it the most is it's something that no one else can really do, because no one else has the multiple recipes and multiple flavors we have. And it just showcases the variabilities in the products we have. So these things, they're really catching on, because every time we come out with any kind of a limited edition, whether it be a single barrel or a small batch, that's the only time you'll ever see it. And next time it'll be something different. And there's a lot of people. There's a gentleman that was out here when you came in that he went out and bought two this morning. And he's going to go out, he said, and get a case sometime later on today, a case of the mariage. And so he would have, and he would save through the years, and then he will collect them every year, and he'll always have some to taste and compare to all the subsequent years down the road.
The Mariage reminded me of dried leaves in the autumn. It had the same sweetness I love in the Four Roses single barrel, but was muted with more grassy and herbal notes. If you can find it, it retails for about $70 a bottle. Now, the guys at Maker's Mark only make one kind of bourbon, but they just keep coming up with special ways to bottle it. We're a month away from Election Day in the U.S., and that inspired the guys in Loretto to do an all-American bottling. Master Distiller Kevin Smith explains.
This was something Bill came up with. The election seems to, I don't know if the right word is polarized or it's captivated, maybe is the right word, the attention of everybody, and for a lot of important reasons. And one of the things that Bill has always been excited about is celebrating, you know, events and things. And we used to always have this tagline, for whatever party you belong to, you know, we belong to the cocktail party. Well, they came up with an interesting idea to kind of drive a little bit more interest and make it fun, if you will, to create these, what we call Election Day bottles. And the one you've got here in front of me is the one that's dipped blue, white, and red, and it's got then the two color label, blue on one side and red on the other, and obviously the symbolic of both the Republican and Democratic Party. But in each case, one of the things a lot of folks may or may not know is when we packed these, we actually did six bottles that were dipped red, white, and blue, and then six bottles that were dipped blue, white, red. So literally every case has got six of each, and then when these are sold, people can grab whichever one they feel is more representative of what party they belong to, or in some cases they grab both. So it's been a lot of fun. And someone was kidding around that maybe we should do a poll and monitor the buying of the bottles to try and be one of those groups that can say, well, this is which way we think everyone's leaning, but I don't think it's scientific enough.
Yeah, I know this is being done also in conjunction with ROC, the vote to try to get some voter registration efforts done too, right?
Well, that absolutely was one of the pieces that came along and we saw as a great opportunity. And one of the things I hope people understand is ROC, the vote, is not a party-affiliated group necessarily. It's really designed to try and I think initially it was designed to try and get maybe younger voters to come on. That's why MTV was such the focus. But yeah, the big thing that they're also doing is there's a group that's going around the United States and in the cities, and actually there's a bus that's a big Maker's kind of looking bus that has Rock the Vote. And hopefully out of this we can captivate. It was kind of a secondary thing. The bottle came first, then the Rock the Vote kind of thing kind of paralleled with that. I don't know which one came first, chicken or the egg, but the actual intent here with the Rock the Vote is to get more voters out into the public that are voting, I guess, is the best way to say it. I'm looking at it more from the fun that I'm having with the people, you know, collecting the bottles and people that do that kind of stuff, because it's been real interesting. I'm hearing a lot of folks say, oh, I got one of those bottles, or I got both those bottles, and that's, to me, it's the voting part is serious and it's important. The fun part is the Maker's Mark.
Each of the bottles requires three trips through the bottling line to do the red, white, and blue wax dips, but they're still being sold at regular retail prices and much higher on eBay. If you visit the distillery in Loretto, there's also a new distillery-only bottling. The Founder's Bottle is a 1-liter bottle with a portrait of founder Bill Samuels Sr. on the front. The sides feature smaller portraits of Bill Samuels Jr. and his son, Rob Samuels, who's following in Bill Jr.'s footsteps. Bill and Rob have also signed the Founder's Bottles. Again, they're available only at the distillery. Now, I've been moving from east to west in this episode, and that takes us to Bardstown, the home of the Bourbon Festival and the bourbon capital of the world. It's the home of Heaven Hill, which opened the first major visitor's center on the Bourbon Trail several years ago, and has just released what may be possibly the best single bourbon I've ever tasted, the 2008 edition of Parker Beam's Heritage Collection. It's a 27-year-old bourbon, and most really old bourbons tend to be so woody that they're like licking the inside of a barrel stave. This one, though, behaves like a bourbon half its age, with a vibrancy and smoothness that defies words. Now, while the bourbon took its time aging in the warehouses, Heaven Hill's Larry Cass says there was a race to get it ready.
We were releasing it just in time for the Bourbon Festival, and I mean just in time. It's a fairly complicated package, and we managed to get the stars to line up literally just at the 11th hour and 59th minute, and we got it on trucks to get out here in the Bardstown area kind of in time for the Bourbon Festival, literally just at the last minute, and got it with kind of close cooperation from Southern Wine and Spirits of Kentucky, our distributor here, on trucks literally on Friday of the weekend of Bourbon Festival. So it is out. That's the good news, and I'm sure it's actually made it out to Louisville and probably Lexington as well by now, now that we're a full 5 or 6 days past that point. It's the 27-year-old second release of the Parker's Heritage Collection, so which is a great whiskey. So and actually, I believe they're starting to pour a little bit of it down in the Bourbon Heritage Center, our visitor center. And actually, it also is coinciding with a special, very limited edition release that actually is just being done, just being sold at the Heritage Center, which is the William Heavenhill Signature Bottling, which we've only done literally 225 bottles of. That's commemorating the 225th anniversary of the birth of William Heavenhill, obviously whom the distillery is named after, and that's a really super special, ultra super, the ultimate premium, a superlative that you can use. So that is being sold just down at the visitor center. Then there's only 225 versions. Then actually, I believe we sold 10 of them just to one single person over the Bourbon Festival weekend, and it's actually $500 a bottle. So it's quite a dear package. So we sold I believe 17 of them to date. So we're quite pleased with that. So.
Now, tell me about William Heavenhill, because the conventional wisdom would be that Heavenhill was named after a location and not a person, and a hill, actually, and not William Heavenhill. So what can you tell me about William Heavenhill?
Well, William Heavenhill actually was the farmer. Well, it was both a location and a person, because the person lent his name to the location. It was the William Heavenhill Farm, the Heavenhill family farm. And William Heavenhill was the farmer whose land you're currently standing on right now, and whose spring we drew the water from to make the first bourbon that we produced here, the Heavenhill Spring down the hill here. William Heavenhill, now actually the William Heavenhill's in the interesting little story. William Heavenhill, the Heavenhill family spelled their name Heavenhill one word, and the original name of the first distillery here down the hill was Old Heavenhill Springs Distillery, and it spelled it with one word. But when it was reincorporated, and they filed the incorporation papers actually during the Depression in 1934, when they got the paperwork back from the federal government, it had split Heavenhill into two words. But the family was, a little at that point, times were tough, and they decided that they were going to live with Heavenhill with two words rather than spend the $25 to refile the paper, because $25 was a lot of money back then. So they said, we'll live with Heavenhill as two words. So that's why it's two words now rather than one word, which is what William Heavenhill. But actually, the package down there that we're selling right now, the William Heavenhill Signature Edition, has Heavenhill as one word. So.
And while we're talking about figures from history, last week, also during the Bourbon Festival, Evan Williams was made part of the Bourbon Hall of Fame. So what can you tell us about Evan Williams?
Well, actually, Evan Williams, and you can certainly read a lot about Evan Williams in lots of historical papers and whatnot, and at the Filson Society in Louisville, but and actually in a historical marker on 4th and Main in Louisville itself. Evan Williams is generally regarded as kind of Kentucky's first commercial distiller, and he set up a distillery kind of at the foot of 4th and Main in Louisville in 1783, and he was really a kind of a jack of all trades, and aside from being a commercial distiller and farmer, which is kind of went hand in hand back then, of course, he was on the board of aldermen for the city of Louisville, Fort Louisville, and was renowned for bringing a jug of his whiskey to the aldermanic meetings, and was routinely censured for doing so, but was also known for never leaving with a full jug. But he was also the harbor master of the port of Louisville and was actually the city jailer for Louisville. And designed the first jail, and they still have the blueprints for that. So a multi-talented guy. They have the actual papers where he signed the distillery license, and actually we have a copy of that down at the visitor center that you can see in our Evan Williams display. So considered Kentucky's first licensed commercial distiller, and obviously our brand Evan Williams is named after him, kind of honors his traditions and his heritage.
Now we've talked about the Heritage Center, and this was really the first of the big, large-scale visitors centers to spring up around the Kentucky distilleries, and was really instrumental in starting off the bourbon trail, as it were, for visitors. Tell me about a little of the history behind the Heritage Center itself.
The Heritage Center really was something that that I guess came out of a couple of influences here. You know, here at Heaven Hill, we are right in Bardstown. We're one of only two distilleries that are left here in Bardstown ourselves, and Barton / Constellation / Tom Moore, I guess, is what they're going to be calling themselves as their visitor centers. You know, they've just recently announced, and they're joining the Bourbon Trail as well, which is just great. Of course, Bardstown itself was kind of the traditional historical center of its. It's actually registered as the Bourbon Capital of the World, Circle R. And Bardstown itself is a place of great historical significance. The St. Joseph's Proto Cathedral, the first cathedral west of the Alleghenies, is located here. Aside from being a distilling center of great historical significance, it is itself a town of great historical significance. And Heaven Hill has, and we are ourselves, we sit, as you saw, we sit right next to my old Kentucky home, the Stephen Foster home, and my old Kentucky home State Park. And Heaven Hill has sponsored a tourmobile here since the early 1970s. So we've always done a very robust tour business here for many, many years. I mean, decades. We've brought lots and lots of tourists and visitors here to Heaven Hill. So we've kind of always done a great tour business here, kind of just bringing people here to tour what we had here without really having, a really great natural tour visitor center facility. So we kind of been planning to do a great visitor center facility for some time, and it came together really in 2004. Well, we began planning it and broke ground actually in 2002. In 2004, when we built it, as you mentioned, it really was kind of, I guess, the first real major new dedicated tour facility on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, and I guess we really did light a fire under everybody else, because within the past 3 years there really have been a number of new visitor center that people have developed at some of the other distilleries, and clearly I think it's a case of the rising tide raising all ships. It's the Bourbon Trail has really taken off now, and it's very easy for people to go from our great visitor center down the road right to Maker's Mark, and over to Jim Beam has just announced that they're completely redoing their visitors' experience as well. So, and over in the eastern part of the state, there's been a great rededication on the part of Wild Turkey and Four Roses and Buffalo Trace. So it really has lit a fire under everybody else. So we're just pleased as can be with what's happened with our visitors' facility. And between what we have here and what we have at my old Kentucky home, State Park, it really is a great opportunity to capture a lot of the tourism business right here in literally a half square mile area. So,
and for the tourist who's coming here for the first time, it's not as though you have to really go very far, because you've got all these visitor centers that are really within about an hour or so from each other.
Very much so. And I think one of the other things that you've seen, and one of the things, frankly, that we are trying to work with and administer and manage, frankly, is, I guess this goes under the category of nice problem to have, is kind of a subcategory or sub-business of tour operators that are trying to kind of hitch on to, let's put tour packages together to take advantage of the Bourbon Trail, and you know, the city of Louisville and the city of Lexington, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, certainly have kind of gotten the religion, so to speak, and have put together the city of Louisville, the Convention and Visitors Bureau there has put together the Urban Bourbon Trail and is heavily promoting and marketing and spending lots of money to promote and market the Urban Bourbon Trail, which is kind of Louisville centric part of the Bourbon Trail, which is a series of bars and hotels and Louisville-based things that kind of promote bourbon. And of course, the distilleries are tied into that. We promote ourselves within that venue. So there's, you know, the state wants to market the Bourbon Trail. So, you know, it's gone, you know, the pendulum has swung so much the other way where everybody is, the light bulb has gone off. Everybody's realized what an absolutely wonderful equity we have here in the Bourbon Trail and how much people want to come and explore it. And, you know, for either mercenary reasons and for altruistic reasons, for good reasons and bad reasons, everybody wants to come and take advantage of the Bourbon Festival and join us in marketing it.
And it's not just bourbon. I know you've got something special going on during October over here at the Heritage Center too, right?
Yes. I mean, you know, we're always kind of creating, you know, bigger events and taking advantage of seasonality events and you know, whether it's, you know, Halloween-based events, you know, whatever it is, holiday events, you know, that's very, very important. You know, kind of event-focused, seasonality-focused things are always very important to kind of keeping a broader focus at the Visitor Center, and that's very important because we do a broad-based business at the Visitor Center, and by that I mean there's lots of families that come there, and we want that to be a welcoming experience for everybody. So when you come this time of year, you'll see lots of Halloween kind of things there, and when you come in the holidays, you'll see lots of holiday focused things there. So it's a very much a broad based type of experience.
How many folks do you draw through here a year?
We're drawing 70,000-80,000 people a year, you know, through here now. So it really has been remarkable. We're actually, you know, pretty close to outdrawing my old Kentucky home, which is almost tough for us to, you know. I mean, my old Kentucky home is on the state quarter, you know. You know, so, but we have a lot of people that go from one to the other. And frankly, now we're sponsoring, you know, the Tourmobile. I mentioned that earlier. That's a great example, kind of how, you know, we feel like, you know, this whole tour experience here in Bardstown is really, really blossomed. You know, that when we first started, it was a farm tractor, and we pulled these little open, there were the, we had the things from the Kentucky State Fair, actually. They were these open trams, and they very slowly went around from the cathedral to some of the historic homes to my old Kentucky home, and of course here to the distillery. And we still actually follow a fairly similar route, and take them, and there's lots of great historical things to see here. But the vehicle that we were take people around in has gotten better and better. You know, it went from that, and we got an open tram that we bought from Kings Island, and kind of spruced up a little bit, and now we have this beautiful trolley that we bought new. You know, a beautiful brand new trolley that we bought, our dedicated Heaven Hill trolley, and the whole experience now. The city of Bardstown has worked with us. We have a dedicated trolley stop in the circle in the middle of the town square there, and we have signage all over town. And again, the whole idea here is we bring people all over town and deliver an experience whereby we take them around to all the historical sites in Bardstown, and of course we bring them here to the distillery as well. So it's really kind of a value-added experience, and again, it raises all the ships, I think. That rising tide raises all the boats, I think. So
I only had a couple of days in the area, so that meant leaving Wild Turkey, Woodford Reserve, and Jim Beam for another visit. And as Larry mentioned, the other Bardstown distillery will be opening for tours soon. The Constellation Brands Distillery is planning to start offering tours next year and plans to have a visitor's center open by 2010. Now, why the explosion of interest in bourbon these days? Well, Jim Rutledge at Four Roses thinks it dates back to something that happened 25 years ago this year.
I think it all generated and started with the single barrels and small batches. Quite honestly, the distillers, the distilleries were not doing anything different than we did 20 years ago, except showcasing our abilities with the premium products that we've made for years and years and years. And we used to not do that. And we'd put, we'd distill our barrels, we'd age it, we'd fill the bottles that we've been filling for years. But through that, there wasn't anything really exciting in our industry. And when the first single barrel was introduced, I think it was 1983, Blanton's was the first, and then Jim Beam came out with their small batch collection at the end of the 80s. That just has breathed new life into our industry. And as we grow and grow, it's just becoming so exciting because people can see what we're doing, and people are finding out it's not only the United States but around the world, hey, there's another whiskey other than Scotch. Yeah, it's bourbon whiskey. And people are finding that, I think people had the perception years ago that bourbon was something that you walk into a liquor store and look around and find the least expensive bottle, and bourbon is bourbon. Well, people are finding out now that every distillery is different, and even within the distilleries, the bottles that are filled with under different labels are different. And this single barrels, the small batches, are just showcasing the abilities we have to put excellent whiskeys on the shelves and into consumers' hands.
A couple of notes to close things out. Next time around, we'll hear from Glenmorangie's Dr. Bill Lumsden, who spends a lot of his time in bourbon country as well, helping to select wood that goes into the barrels that eventually make it to Glenmorangie and Ardbeg. Finally, I want to thank Chad, Mike, and Christy at the Apple Store in nearby Cherry Hill, New Jersey. You might have noticed some minor audio problems during the episodes from Whiskey Live in Paris. I use an iPod to record my interviews in the field, and the third-party attachment that lets me use a broadcast-quality microphone broke while I was in Paris. The gang at the Apple Store was able to help me diagnose the problem, and they jumped through some extra hoops to help me replace that part under warranty and time to get me on the road to Kentucky with no delays. Of course, you can always find past episodes at the WhiskeyCast page in the iTunes Music Store, and you can leave feedback there as well. You can also email me. The address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and you'll find links, my whiskey ratings, the calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008. And comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.